Thanks for listening and being a part of The Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Lots of comments coming through on our chat box on tntradio.live in reference to Julian Assange. It's interesting. They go one way on this particular platform, and it's interesting to hear what people say. Now, that question in our poll today, our survey through For My Say, all you've got to do, you've got 30 minutes to lodge your vote on the question. I'll tell you the question again in a second, but you've got to get that app downloaded. Very easy to do. Go to your Apple App Store, go to your Play Store if you're on Android, and find yourself For My Say. That's For the numeral. Okay, it starts with For the numeral, M-Y-S-A-Y, For My Say. Get yourself that app, and then on the app, you'll find the question, should laws be amended to allow women to carry pepper spray for self-defense? Should laws be amended to allow women to carry pepper spray for self-defense? You've got three options, yes, no, or unsure. I'm not unsure. I say yes. I say absolutely yes. Now, this is an interesting rumor sweeping Washington, D.C. at the moment. It's reported by the Horn News this morning. The political establishment is scrambling to contain the explosive fallout from Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s latest bombshell. The anti-establishment Democrat turned independent says he was directly offered the chance to join former President Donald Trump's presidential ticket as running mate. Kennedy Jr. said Trump's team had approached him about forming a unity ticket, but he declined. However, a senior Trump advisor has pushed back on Kennedy's claim. On Monday, Kennedy wrote on his ex social media platform, President Trump's emissaries asked me to be his VP. I respectfully declined the offer. Kennedy also said in a January interview that people from the Trump team had reached out to me about the vice presidential role. Could you imagine that happening? Big, big, big development. Chris LaCivita, a senior campaign advisor in the Trump campaign, disputed Kennedy's claim, calling him a lefty loony that would never be approached to be on the ticket. Sorry. Republicans and Democrats are both jockeying to define Kennedy and his independent campaign in a way that hurt their main opponent. Trump's side has regularly labeled Kennedy's views far too liberal for the GOP base, while President Joe Biden's campaign has attempted to link him to Trump and the MAGA movement as well. Trump recently dismissed Kennedy as far too liberal on Truth Social posts, but encouraged Democrat voters to consider his independent campaign. Look, I think whichever way you read that, I think we can come to the understanding that it's not true. Whether someone has whispered something to someone over a drink at a function or a campaign launch, I don't know. Whether an advisor has told another advisor and they've gone back to head office and it's spread that way, I don't know. But I couldn't imagine Trump taking Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and making him his running mate. Having said that, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., as we've said many times, may hold the key to who wins this election because so many are swimming in that pool of undecideds. So many don't know what quite to do because they don't trust Biden anymore, certainly not in his mental state. And, you know, some people have significant doubts about Donald Trump's sanity as well. So therefore, there's a lot in the middle pool. And so who takes the middle pool? Robert F. Kennedy Jr. It makes sense that he would be approached by Trump, but what a weird team that would make, given how desperately conflicted they would be on policy, massively conflicted. Anyway, that's the latest. Now, one quick one before we get to Shane Healey. This is just, I don't know whether you've seen this video, but you've got to go and look it up. A video of a transgender high school athlete zipping past her competitors like as if they weren't there and leaving them behind at a track and field meet has sparked outrage online, as it should. The video, originally shared online by feminist magazine Redux, shows McDaniel High School sophomore Aidan Gallagher speeding past a group of biological female athletes and keeping a great distance between them and her, her as a biological man before she, biological man, ultimately crosses the finish line at the 25.49 second mark, according to the New York Post. The other athletes do not cross the finishing line until the 31 second mark, 6 seconds back. When are we going to get a grip on this? And you know who I blame? I blame the Olympic movement, the International Olympic Committee, because they are the ones who in Paris will allow transgender athletes to compete. Biological men will compete against biological women. And if they're doing that at the highest level, at the top of world sport, what do you expect will happen as it trickles down to district sport, regional sport, high school sport? They'll think it's the way it should be done. It is not the way it should be done. It's grossly unfair and scientifically imbalanced. This is Chris Smith on TNT.
Conversations to inform and include.
It's meant for everyday people to understand.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, Israel keeps vowing to retaliate against Iran, risking further expansion of this war. It certainly creates a doubling of the war, a war against Hamas in Gaza, and then possibly a war between Israel and Iran. This follows Iran's fairly fake attack over the weekend, which sent hundreds of drones and missiles towards Israel. Everyone was telegraphed about the fact that they were coming. They were mostly intercepted by Israel's Iron Dome defense system. They were never going to break through. And then on top of that, we've had that refugee camp hit by drones, Israeli drones, in the past 4 hours. Well, at least the news has come out 4 hours ago, killing 11 Palestinian children in a playground. This is not going to go down well with the world at all. Now, let's get to Shane Healy, who we had on the program yesterday, but talking primarily about Australian issues. Shane has worked in the Australian Army as an intelligence officer and twice deployed to Afghanistan. He's also been involved in some real-time terrorist incidents. He now works for both government and private firms in the area of threat assessment. Shane Healy, we shouldn't be meeting so regularly like this.
No, it's the crazy world we currently live in, Chris.
Yeah, it is. You know, for you to be on the program today, it's because of what has occurred in Gaza and because we have you on regularly on Wednesday, because so much is happening. And then yesterday, we couldn't avoid having you on because of the connection to terrorism to that Monday night attack at the Assyrian church. So you're right. It's a pure reflection of the crazy world we live in at the moment. So based on the latest intelligence, Shane, what will Israel's most likely response be to Iran's attack over the weekend?
So my information is there's a lot of conflict inside the Israeli War Department. Half of them accept that the Iranian response was a red flag, as in that the Iranians knew they had to do something, it had to look big, but they also knew that it wasn't going to do much damage.
No.
So I think there's a bit of safe face. So half of the Israeli War Cabinet accept that. They go, look, they did nothing happen really, but they've safe face. But the other half are like, if we allow them to do that, they're trying to kill Israel, they'll do it again. And this is the back and forth that we've been discussing about that ideological battle for Israel's survival. Yeah. And the Iranian, hostilities towards them at all costs. So it'll come down to what can they do to save face, not escalate? Because the big question is this a state of war? We said weeks ago, as long as it's proxies and it's not a direct attack, it's not a direct state-on-state war. Well, yeah. Now we've got a state-on-state conducting attacks.
Yeah, so, this is a declaration of war.
Yeah, like we discussed last week, they hit an embassy. Like if someone attacked an Australian embassy, no matter where it is, that's part of Australia. So I really don't like defending Iran, but they had their embassy attacked. It's one thing, and we discussed this, hitting Quds officers in transit, on a road, but hitting them in an embassy, that's international law.
Yeah. Yeah, in many ways, it's a little bit like hospitals. They are under the rules of engagement out of bounds, aren't they?
Well, yes, but even more so, like we discussed last week, like Julian Assange sat in an Ecuadorian embassy and the Brits didn't go in. Like they respected the sanctity of the international embassy law. The Israelis threw that out the window when they attacked the Iranians. So I think every country's kind of looking at it through that lens. And what would we do if our embassy was attacked?
Yeah. Is it likely that Iran has some kind of dirty bomb, nuclear bomb, or has the ability to manufacture one within days? Because they keep saying we will release something that we've never released before, intimating that it's nuclear or dirty. They'd have something dirty. They wouldn't have nuclear at this stage, would they?
No. And so a dirty bomb is a radiological IED, improvised explosive device. And it's essentially you'll have some sort of source, cesium-137 or some other source, and the IED blast will penetrate that source and spread that radioactive material across a certain area, usually no more than 100 meters, but it's still radioactive. And, you know, if anyone has seen the IED that went off at the end of the Boston bombing, it wounded and killed people. But if you thought about if that had 200 grams of cesium in it, you still couldn't go to that bomb site. That's the end state. It takes such a long time because it's radioactive.
Right.
Do the Iranians have that? It's not hard to make a dirty bomb, an RDD. Yeah. Like you just need an IED and a source, and every X-ray machine has cesium-137 in it. So there's a lot of this was one of my main roles in the military as a CBRNE threat advisor, and I was looking at incidents around the world where terrorist groups were breaking into hospitals, breaking into mine sites, and stealing these smaller sources.
Having said that, I doubt whether Iran wants to go that one step further and would like Israel not to do anything too dramatic because, you know, if you've got Israel, the UK and America up against you, you don't stand much of a chance, do you?
Yeah, 100%. And we've discussed that previously. There's no, in my assessment, there is no way the Iranian state will use a dirty bomb like RDD or a nuclear weapon, which I don't assess they have yet. Because, like you just said very correctly, Chris, the US, the UK, and others, probably the Saudis, would bomb Iran back into the Stone Age.
And can do very easily. Okay, 11 people, including children, have been killed in this Israeli air attack on this refugee camp in central Gaza as Israel continues its deadly bombardment. This will only isolate Israel even more. What's your tip on this? An accident?
So it'll be the same kind of reporting that we saw after the World Kitchen. You know, some analysts inside looking at a drone feed thought they saw people with weapons taking refuge in a certain location. That went up what the quote-unquote kill chain. They got legal authority to launch. They've launched and they've hit children. And this is, you're right, international community will just keep saying, stop using drones. Where's your collateral damage? Because before you do this, you have to do a collateral damage assessment. What are we actually hitting? What are the costs? What's the human capital?
Yeah.
And then a battle damage assessment is post-blast. And the international community will come down very, very hard on the Israelis for this one.
Yeah, and it will begin about now. We'll take a break, come back with you, Shane. Shane Healy, a former ADF intelligence officer, talking further about what's happening in the Middle East. And we'll also get to the situation in Australia at the moment after that terror attack on Monday night. This is Chris Smith on TNT.
Johnny Vedmore, TNT.
If you go back 3 years ago and ask people why they're wearing a face mask, they'll soon give you an answer. But if you go back 4 years ago and ask the same person why they're not wearing a face mask, the two answers would be so extremely distant from each other that it'll boggle your mind. The only thing that changed was that someone on a television told them they might die if they didn't. Part of the reason we're in such dire straits today is the inability for some people to question the basic principles of what they've been told.
Talk that matters. Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk, TNT.
The Light is Britain's far-right conspiracy theory paper spreading hate and vicious lies. No, that's what the BBC say. The Light is the only national newspaper bringing you the real news and informed opinion on what's really going on today. You can subscribe, order copies, submit articles, and read back issues on our website, thelightpaper.co.uk, and see for yourself why the establishment are so worried about the uncensored truth getting out to people every month. The Light Paper. Not far right, just right so far. thelightpaper.co.uk.
If you're talking about it, we're talking about it. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Shane Healy, the United States is currently training elite Somali forces in counterterrorism. Just explain why that would be a good move and how will they play a role in what's going on in the Middle East?
So the US Green Berets, Special Forces, that's actually their role, is to go and conduct what they call foreign internal defense with host nations. So they go into all of these countries, South America, the Middle East. I worked with them training Iraqis, training Afghans, and they build up the capabilities of the local forces in order to conduct operations against terrorism. So in Somalia, you've got Al-Shabaab. And, you know, they're the premier, well, I won't say premier, but one of the more influential terrorism groups in Africa. And if the Americans can bring up the quality of the Somali soldiers and you get a bit of stability in Somalia. So what was happening is Al-Qaeda and those organizations would run training camps in Somalia, then move those fighters up into the Middle East or into Afghanistan. So if you can control Somalia, you're stemming this flow of foreign fighters and the quality of fighters into the Middle East.
Yeah, so nothing. So that's interesting. So it does have an influence on what's going on in the Middle East.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, right. Yeah. It's very important because if groups like Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State, they need countries that they have freedom of action in, so therefore they can train their fighters up. They're no different to our army. They need to conduct training, weapons training, first aid training, tactical training. And if they don't have a country that they can do this safely in, then their capabilities don't rise. And they look for countries, Yemen, and this is the problem in Afghanistan at the moment. Both Al-Qaeda and Islamic State in Khorasan have massive training camps in Afghanistan again. So right. They're training all these foreign fighters, then sending them off to conduct these attacks.
You mentioned the Green Berets. They come with an enormous reputation. What were they like to work with?
Oh, they're amazing. So they all have set skill sets. So they're all language qualified. They're all have got like because of their used to training with foreign forces, they've got this massive can-do attitude, and they're not there to impose themselves. It's how do we help you help yourself?
Right.
You know, when we were retraining the Iraqi counterterrorism service when ISIS were on the rampage, yeah, they're really, really good at that, gripping the local forces up, empowering them and giving them confidence. And any force needs confidence in order to conduct successful operations.
Very, very true. Let's go back to more local issues. The 15 or 16-year-old boy who was arrested for the stabbing of the bishop in Wakeley can be heard speaking. He allegedly says in Arabic, "If the bishop didn't get himself involved in my religion, if he hadn't spoken about my prophet, he wouldn't have come here. If he just spoke about his own religion, I wouldn't have come." What translations have you seen, Shane? And do we know how radicalized this kid was?
So I did one of those translations and I had two fellow expert linguists to inform me. So I will stand by that translation.
Right.
And it's interesting to me because it introduces a third person. Did he get that information by himself, or did someone kind of plant him to conduct these operations? We know that from his criminal history, he's had a fascination with knives. He's already been before the courts. Not having an intimate knowledge on his mental health, which will come into his assessment.
Yeah.
But he'll be undergoing a violent extreme risk assessment currently. The team that's doing it is actually a team I used to work with Youth Justice, and they'll look at all this. But it was definitely the religious motivation of And this is that Sunni Salafist Islam kind of your same rhetoric as ISIS and Al Qaeda. You know, you can't talk about the Prophet, peace be upon him. You know, very stoic, and they found another young man to do their bidding.
Yeah, and I wonder whether police are prepared to follow the trail back to who may have put him up to this, and if someone has, there are charges that can be laid on for that, can't there?
Well, 100%. So if you look at the Curtis Chang murder, you know, the
young, employee at the Parramatta headquarters.
Yeah, correct. So not only was the young man who shot him convicted and put in a jail, but who sold him the gun got the young guy is in Supermax for 30 years.
Yeah.
You know? So they will do this. This is why yesterday I explained the importance of it becoming a terrorist incident and bringing in ASIO and the strategic intelligence agencies, because they can find all this out.
Yeah, and this is part of the investigation. As yet, no charges laid. How long do they have before they have to?
Given his injuries, they will obviously conduct that. And then there's probably, a mental health assessment being conducted first.
Right.
Because that'll depend on the charges.
Right.
What, you know, if it, they charge. So, and I go back to the Mertney incident in Wynyard in 2019. He was dealt with under the Mental Health Act, not the Terrorism Act. And if you remember, you know, he killed that sex worker, then he was running around Wynyard trying to stab people, and he was yelling, Allahu Akbar, and
he got nailed with that milk crate.
Yeah, correct, 100%. But they dealt with him under the Mental Health Act, not under terrorism. So I think there's part of the reason he hasn't been charged yet. Terrorism charges are Commonwealth. They come in a different jurisdiction compared to the New South Wales Mental Health Act at a local jurisdiction.
Right. It's interesting. I'm just reading a story now in reference to the charges that may be laid. If police do ultimately lay charges, the boy's identity, details of which, including his religion, have been kept secret, will not be published, according to state criminal laws protecting underage offenders. It comes as others face charges over the aftermath of the attack, during which police faced off against a large and violent mob. Just awful. I wonder whether, because of this and because we've had the Premier say, don't take the law into your own hands, and that suggests to me today, Shane, that maybe someone or maybe a group within the Assyrian community, maybe one of the kings, which still exist apparently, I was told by a police informant last night, they could be aiming to go and find out who put him up to this, and we could have a gang war ensue. Maybe that's why we heard from the Premier today, do you think?
100%. Maybe not a gang war, but if it came out that he was given that information and directions from a masala or a mosque in a Sydney suburb, the chances of retribution are extremely high.
Yeah.
Which we saw the other night. And we've seen, to be fair, in the past. And that when I was part of the joint counterterrorism team, that would be the highest thing, the risk assessment. Risk to the to civilians, risk to the police, risk to the, unfortunately, risk to the offender, and risk to the community. So that would be definitely something that law enforcement would be looking at. And in some ways, it is the joys of using a youth offender, because everything will be sealed. A lot of the youth cases that I worked on, because they were juvenile offenders, there's suppression orders in place. Whereas if it was a 20-year-old man that did that stabbing, no suppression order, everything's out there, and then you have a lot more hostility in the community.
That's worth mentioning. That's interesting. Meanwhile, they're saying they're going to start rounding up some of these hundreds that I think there were 600 that turned up after this attack and then set upon police. I have a feeling that a few might be woken up at about 4 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Yeah, and if they don't get everyone, heaven help the police station they get taken to. And I've seen, if you Google the Fatima Elima arrest, where 50 Muslim men turned up at Mascot Police Station and unfortunately, Karen Webb is not the leader you want in charge of this for a start. But Chris Minns better be getting some excellent advice from the AFP on these arrests, because if you don't get the right people quickly, you know, they turned up through social media the other night at a church. Can you imagine if some of their mates, brothers, cousins, relatives started getting arrested? I thought that Karen Webb's language is very divisive. I get that she's trying to, you can't hurt police. Well, actually, I think that's police role. That's why they're law enforcement, to put yourselves between harm and not. The other issue, I think, was there was poor leadership at the site. So many police standing around. They should have started making arrests then when it was already chaotic, rather than try to do it now. Yeah, so I think that they will need excellent coordination and planning, because if they don't get the right people together, this will escalate.
And plenty of special operations police. One quick one. This is a bizarre little story. Australian military personnel have removed a small amount of uranium ore and a Geiger counter from a soldier's bedroom at Holsworthy Barracks in southwestern Sydney. What?
Yeah, it was funny. So the unit that it responded is my old unit, Special Operations Engineer Regiment. And it was like, no one could believe it. They thought it was like April 1st. Like, is this real? One of the things that when I was the threat analyst out there, we would look at is the detection threshold. So my biggest question is, how did, not so much it was purchased, but there's a lot of items that Border Force, ASIO, and Home Affairs have on a watch list. So, you know, if you go and get a large quantity of nail polish remover or ammonium, you just flag up on a what's this person doing, because they're precursor chemicals for a bomb. So the fact that someone could get radiological material through the post or whoever they got it, and yeah, then onto Army Base, which is in Safe Base Charlie, and you've got to get search to go on, that's the worrying thing. And yeah, from a, we were talking about a dirty bomb before in Iran, this is exactly what you would use to make a dirty bomb.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope they get to the bottom of this one. Thank you so much for your time, Shane Healy. I'll keep out of your face for a week.
Anytime, Chris. Thank you.
Thank you, mate. Shane Healy, former ADF intelligence officer and a fellow who knows his way around the Middle East, as you can tell. And just summing up what he thinks may unfold there, and then also looking at the terrorism, I guess, follow-up from the arrest that occurred on Monday night, tracing back what he's done, whether someone has put him up to it, which is highly likely, someone that had it in for the Assyrians or someone that had it in for the bishop, and then they found themselves a 15-year-old to carry it out, and we'll see whether they can trace it back to some kind of operator. We will take a break because we've got to get a news update for you. Let's do that. And then we're going to talk cyber and technology. And if you want to ask Alex Zaharoff-Royd any question whatsoever about any of your computers, any of your software, any of your new gadgets, things that are on the market that you've got your eye on, he is the man. Free advice from the tech guru himself, Alex Zaharoff-Royd. You can jump on our Talkback lines from the United States or Canada, 1-888-201-6425. If you've got a question from the UK, please call Alex on 033-0024-1026. And from Australia or New Zealand, 1-800-670-310. Let's get to the newsroom on TNT.
Here's some more potentially bad news.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. Australia's unveiled a new national defence strategy with a greater focus on the Pacific as tensions rise with China. Israel's brutality against Palestinians in Gaza is once again in the spotlight after a new mass grave was uncovered at the Al-Shifa hospital. And the BBC has come under fire after one of its radio hosts flipped the script and took aim at the West for refusing to hold Israel accountable for the mounting civilian death toll.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
TNT Radio.
We have closed our ballot box or our voting box to be part of the For My Say question of the day, which is, should laws be amended to allow women to carry pepper spray for self-defense? Thank you so much for being part of it. We're just collaborating and calculating the results right now. It'll be interesting to see who's voted yes, no, or unsure on the issue of pepper spray for women. Very interesting question. And thank you to the people from For My Say. We'll have those results for you between now and 5 o'clock. Let's get to our tech guru from techadvice.life, Alex Zaharoff-Reut. Welcome.
Smithy, always great to be here and with the audience.
Yeah, good to have you here, mate. Let's get down to business. And this is probably a very, very big economic story. Forget about technology. We've got two pieces of Elon Musk news. The first is that Elon is sacking 10% of Tesla's workforce. What's happening there?
Yeah, well, that's about 14,000 people. They've got 140,000
wow.
people. Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah. Well, that's what it would mean. And that's including some senior executives as opposed to just, you know, sales teams and presumably factory workers. I mean, famously, Elon Musk doesn't have a PR department at Tesla. So nobody from that department is going to go. But he wrote in a letter to employees, as we prepare the company for our next phase of growth, it is extremely important to look at every aspect of the company for cost reductions and increasing productivity. There is nothing I hate more, he says, but it must be done to ensure the company is lean, innovative, and hungry for the next growth cycle. Now,
but he's just taken the backside out of that arm of his business.
Well, look, 10% is, he still has 90% of the people there. And look, he got rid of 90% of the people or 80% of the people at X, and that business kept on going.
Sure.
So, you know, there's probably some fat to be cut. But, you know, the world is still suffering from inflationary pressures. I mean, just because inflation didn't moderate in the States. It went up and people were worried about that. And there's other sectors that are also sacking people. But JP Morgan is saying that this is as a result of declining demand for Tesla's EVs. Now,
yeah.
The numbers are bearing this out. Last year, they sold 430,000-odd. This year, in this first quarter of this year, they only sold 386,000, which is 8.5% fewer cars. Mm. Now, Tesla did blame this on assembly line updates in California and repeated factory shutdowns. But, you know, people are worried about EVs. They've had bad publicity.
Yeah.
You can't charge them properly in the freezing cold US winters.
No.
I've seen in California the videos on Twitter, you've got to wait for a mile or two in the line to get to a charging station.
That's
then
ridiculous.
The charging stations, yeah, well, then the charging stations are full. And so the quick charge takes twice as long because it's only supposed to be a quick charge when it's about 80% capacity. You know, prices are going up. And of course, people are worried about battery fires. So
yeah. We're starting to see the turnaround in Australia. Everything in Australia happens 2.5 years after everyone else. But we're starting to see a plateauing of demand in Australia, not a drop like in the UK, the United States and Europe. But it will come to Australia very soon, I'd say.
Look, that's for sure. And in fact, I mean, one of the pieces that we're going to talk about a bit later, but I may as well bring it up now. The Australian Automobile Association has put out stats showing that, yes, EV sales in Australia are up. I mean, we've seen the stats where BYD is selling more than Telstra. But they say that there are more people buying hybrid vehicles than EVs.
Yep.
Because why wouldn't you want the benefit of, you know, using less petrol when you're driving around town, but then when you need to put the pedal to the metal, going a long distance, you just want to fill up in, you know, a few minutes and off you go. And there are such things as plug-in hybrids, which will take both electricity and petrol. So
yep.
Hybrids make more sense.
And hybrids do. I had a conversation with someone who bought a hybrid only recently and said for all those reasons why they did. Now, the second piece of information coming out of Tesla involves his full self-driving concept.
Yes. Now, this is misnamed because you've always had to, you know, supervise it. And he's now calling it full self-driving supervised in brackets. Now, in the US, this has been available for $199 per month, but he's halved this to a $99 per month subscription. But the thing is that this is put up against the fact that you can buy a subscription for life for $12,000 US, down from $15,000 a couple of years ago. So you've got to ask yourself, well, how many years do I have to own the car if I'm paying for the full price subscription? And it's about 10 years that you have to stay with the same Tesla car. And you can't just move the subscription from one car to another. I mean, there are some instances where you can. So, you know, people on Twitter have said, oh, is Elon betting the company on autonomy? He's lost his mind. And they said, what do you expect from a guy who bet his car company on electrification in 2003? I mean, they're saying that in a positive way. And Elon Musk replied, look, I'm not quite betting the company, but going balls to the wall for autonomy is a blindingly obvious move. Everything else is like variations on a horse carriage. So look, full self-driving is not legal in Australia. It's not legal in Hong Kong. It's not legal in Europe, as far as I'm aware, but it is legal in the US. And look, Elon Musk wants to announce robo-taxis on the 8th of August. I mean, he announced that 5 years ago. It hasn't happened yet. So will that be supervised as well? It's not much of a robo-taxi if there's a guy sitting in the front with you.
That's right. It's not much at all, is it? That's funny. All right. I've got some results in the For My Say poll report for our viewers. Should laws be amended to allow women to carry pepper spray for self-defense? Now, those who were saying that they're unsure, they came in at, let me see, 85, 95, 94, 6%. I think that's right. Unsure, 6%. Yeah, 5.84% unsure. Those who were voting no, they shouldn't have access to pepper spray to defend themselves, that reached 19%, and an overwhelming support for this of 75.2% of those who voted. Now, that's interesting because we've got about 2.5 times more people voting this time. So that's excellent. Some good numbers this time, some very, very healthy numbers who voted. Thank you very much for going out of your way to do that. Appreciated that, but 75.2% of you have said that law should be amended to allow women to carry pepper spray for self-defense, and I would have thought that is the next step forward. I've got to take a break. We'll come back with Alex Zaharoff-Reut talking cyber and technology right after this on TNT.
While serving in Afghanistan, I was hit by sniper fire. The fighting was so intense, the medevac chopper was barely able to land. In the hospital, I was given a 5% chance to live. It's a good thing math wasn't my best subject. Today, I visit classrooms and share my story. I talk to kids about dealing with life's struggles. I tell them, with a little help and a lot of work, that you can overcome any challenge.
DAV helps veterans like Adam get the benefits they've earned. They help more than 1 million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
I know that some struggles are big and some are small. But they're all struggles, and you have to learn to get through them. With support from DAV, more veterans like me can live their best life. And as a new father, I have one more reason to keep on keeping on. My victory is being there for the next generation.
Adam Alexander, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
I want to eat apples and bananas. I need to eat apples and bananas. Why can't I eat apples and bananas?
Support the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks to help provide meals to those in need. Join us at feedingamerica.org.
Where the story goes, we follow. Chris Smith on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
We're talking cyber, we're talking technology, and you can be talking to Alex as well. All you've got to do is dial one of our talkback numbers. You can ask him about anything that you have a question for, maybe something related to a new device you're interested in, maybe something related to AI or other software or a new computer that you have got your eyes on. He's road tested most of this stuff right around the world, and he can help you right now. So jump on one of our talkback lines from the United States and Canada, 1-888-201-6425. From the UK, 033-0024-1026. And from Australia or New Zealand, 1-800-670-310. Alex, let's tell me this is not true. Is Elon Musk going to charge me for posting something on X now?
Look, he's already been trialing the charging of new users a small fee, which is a dollar in New Zealand and also in the Philippines.
A dollar what? And per what?
Per year. So it's not $8 a month in US dollars for the blue tick. It's just a way to, well, they're saying here, new accounts are required to pay a small annual fee before you're able to post, like, bookmark, and reply. This is to reduce spam and to create a better experience for everyone. You can still follow accounts and browse for free.
Now, How does it reduce spam?
Well, Elon Musk says, unfortunately, a small fee for new user write access is the only way to curb the relentless onslaught of bots. And he says that current AI and troll farms can pass the "Are you a bot?" test with ease. And he also says that the onslaught of fake accounts also uses up the available, you know, namespace, the username. So many good handles are taken as a result. And look, already bots are paying their $8 fee. I mean, whoever's operating them for some of these accounts that have the little blue tick. So I'm not exactly sure, but it will stop at least those people who are trying to sign up millions of accounts or thousands of accounts and operate them through a bot farm. And look, I see bots all the time. I mean, I clear bots every day. I clear Crypto Bros and
Cam Girls.
And well, you go into your follower list and you look. So when you click on your name in the top left-hand corner, or you tap it on your phone, it shows you your account and you can see who your followers are and how many are there. So you tap on that or click on that, and then you can see verified followers, so those who have paid for the blue tick,
and
you can see followers, right? So you look at the follower list, because someone normally verified followers are not scammers, but you look at the follower list and then you have a look. And if you see somebody with their head, like you're seeing the back of their head, so it's some pretty girl, well, you think they're pretty, you just see the back of their head. And then they normally have one comment of some sort, which is, or they repost other people's comments and have nothing of their own, but they have one sort of comment that is some sort of interesting, insightful statement, but there's nothing else. They have thousands of people they're following and a very small number or no followers themselves. And to me, that's an obvious bot account. I mean, there's no activity there, but you see people promoting crypto. You see, I mean, endless amounts of fake
Elons.
What's
the traffic for bots then?
Well, according to Thales, which is a huge company in France that does aerospace and transportation and military stuff, they've put out a report from their arm that's called, I'm just looking here, it's called Imperva. And they've got a 2024 bad bot report. And they say that nearly half, 49.6% of all internet traffics came from bots last year. That's 2% over the previous year and the highest level that they've reported since they began monitoring for this traffic in 2013. And they say that it's definitely going to increase so that pretty soon there'll be more bot traffic than human traffic on the internet.
That's amazing. More bots than human traffic. Like, just, it's sci-fi stuff, isn't it?
Well, it is. And I mean, a lot of these are being, the rapid adoption of generative AI and large language models. It's seen this volume of simple bots increasing to 39.6% last year, up from 33% the year before. And this tech uses web scraping bots and automated crawlers to feed training models while enabling non-technical users to write automated scripts for their own use. So that's where script kiddies who are not very advanced at cybercrime can use AI to up their game. And then also, gaming saw a large proportion of bad bot traffic. Retailers, travel, financial services also experienced the highest volume of bot attacks. And these are closely mimicking human behavior and evading defenses. And this was the highest on law and government, entertainment, and financial services sites. So we are all under attack from these bots. And Elon Musk's attempts to kill the bots has worked. A number of people in the last couple of weeks when he announced the bot ban was happening again said, oh, I dropped a few hundred or a few thousand followers. They didn't know why. Yeah, they didn't know why. And people said, oh, well, Elon Musk just went on an attack with the bots. But the bots come back very quickly. So hopefully this imposition globally of this $1 token fee is going to make a real difference on the bots, who will hopefully attack Threads or Instagram or something else and leave X alone.
Interesting. For those who like to play poker online, WeFatShug on TNTRadio.live chat box says, most of the bots are playing on poker sites. There was a time when poker players loved bots at the table, so easy to spot and beat. Different story nowadays.
Well, that would be, it'd be like Garry Kasparov trying to win against the chess computers. I mean, they're so advanced, they can beat the grandmasters. Yeah, so you can imagine if you're trying to win actual money on poker, you're going to have to be some sort of absolute card shark to get past the AI that can use brute force to win all the games.
Yeah, they can. Okay, let's talk about another fake. There's been a warning issued today on fake invoices.
Yeah, this comes from the ACCC's Scam Watch site. Now, I've got a link to all the stories, but including this one, at my website. And this warning came up because I was watching a news report today about a database from a company called Smoke Alarm Solutions, and they had 800,000 customer records that were just on the internet. If you knew where to find it, you could take all that information. There were quotes and people's details. Now, that database has been taken offline. We had the Optus attack, we had the Medibank attack. I mean, there are hack attacks all the time, and I'm receiving personally invoices. They mainly go to my spam folder, but from the security companies Norton and McAfee, I get invoices from places like Amazon saying I've bought an expensive $3,000 projector, and they always say, "Oh, if you want to query this, if you want to check this invoice, give us a call." And of course, their phone number, if you ring it, they'll answer, "Oh, yeah, this is Norton or this is Amazon," but it's a scam call center trying to get your money, like in that movie The Beekeeper with Jason Statham, if you've had a chance to see that. But the Scam Watch site lists how these scams work, and they also list how you can spot a scam. So look, all the details are there, but basically often what happens is businesses get hacked, and then the bad guys are in their emails and they're in their invoicing systems, and they're sending out invoices, and they change the bank account details. I might even say, "Hey, we just changed banks recently. Please, send the money to here." And the company concerned has no idea this is happening, and the person who's paying their rent or is paying $1 million for a house. I mean, this happened to my dearly departed cousin's. It's not my direct cousin, but a family relative. He had a friend in China that was sending some information. His computer got hacked, and not my cousin's father, but this other guy. And in any case, this money he wanted to transfer to my uncle, as it were, the scammers got in the way and said, "Oh no, my details are different. Please send the money here." And he lost $500,000. So this happens to people. This happened to a famous Australian blogger. She paid all this money for a house, and it got sent to somebody else. And the money can generally not be responded. If you're not sure, if you're getting an invoice, don't ring the number on the invoice. I mean, check the invoice against other invoices. If the bank details are different, be aware. But also ring the company. Look for their phone number on their website. Ring the company and say, "Hey, did you send me an invoice? Have you changed your bank details?" Don't just pay things. I mean, companies used to send you in the mail 20 years ago, they'd send fake invoices, and the accounts person would just pay it.
Yeah,
I mean, that was a scam that was well known. Well, this is the modern version of that, and people are being caught, and they're losing millions upon millions of dollars.
Yeah, it's just rife out there. It's unbelievable. Now, chip maker AMD, which is the big competitor Intel, has just launched a new AI enhanced chips for business laptops and desktop computers.
Yeah, now they were first to market with AI chips for the Windows world. So they beat Intel by over a year, and they've already launched their second generation consumer chips. And now they've launched what's known as the AMD Ryzen 8000 series and the 8000 Pro. And so these are designed for business laptops and desktops. The consumer ones are already out there. And they're claiming that it's nearly 50% faster performance than Intel's chips, whilst also using less energy. And usually AMD's models, because they're more competitive than Intel, they don't have as big a market share as Intel, they're normally more competitive in price. And that's why companies like to pay less for the computers and then to get more performance than Intel, and also to use less energy. I mean, energy prices going through the roof. If your energy bill is down in your data center or in your office full of computers, well, you're going to be very happy about that. So, I mean, the question is, why, if you've got a really good computer, why would you need an AI PC? Mm. Well, this is where you can leverage generative AI's ability to help you create more professional documents and emails and presentations. Just from a few bullet points, you can just sort of feed a bit of information or say, "Here's a previous presentation, help me to modify what I've already got." You can summarize documents, you can respond to emails. I mean, if you're on Zoom, for example, and you're getting a transcript, you can ask it to give you the summary of all the important topics. You can ask it to create graphics and music and video. And the whole idea is that you want to be able to do as much of this locally on your own computer, as opposed to sending it over the web, over the, you know, the internet to the cloud, to ChatGPT or Microsoft or Google or anybody else, because everybody wants their privacy. And also it's much quicker if you can do it locally. So
yeah,
all the new computers are coming out with this particular feature. And it's the reason from AMD and Intel and HP and Lenovo and all the companies to buy a new PC. Even Apple is going to launch new M4 chips later this year, which will be very heavy on all this AI stuff. So if you haven't got an AI PC, the computer companies are going to try and convince you it's time to get a new one. You don't have to straight away. Your existing computer will work for two or three more years yet. But if you're doing a lot of this AI stuff, it makes sense to do as much of it locally as you can. And, you know, we're going to hear more about this throughout the rest of the year and the rest of the decade.
Yeah, we are. And we're going to get to the stage very quickly where people will ask the question, what is your computer? Is it AI or not AI? Have you got an old one or have you got a new one?
That's right. Yeah. And look, it's a bit like that Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy book. You know, it was a computer that could answer all these questions. There was no obvious connection to a galactic internet that was ever spoken about. The book just had all this information inside and it could just generate it and give you the answers. So, you know, if you can have a device that's offline, I mean, if there's some sort of blackout and you need to learn about first aid or something else, you just say, hey, how do I tie a tourniquet or whatever it is? And the computer will just tell you and it will just have this knowledge. It'll be like having a robot like C-3PO, and it won't be long before there are robots roaming around. By the end of the decade, they'll be in people's homes for sure. Yeah.
Tell us very quickly about the smartphone sales for 2024. Who's winning?
Samsung's back in the top spot for the first 3 months of 2024.
Right.
Apple's gone back to number two spot, and you've got companies like Xiaomi, and you've got Oppo, and you've even got this company called Transsion, which we've never heard of. I mean, it makes smartphones for emerging markets, but they've gone from number fifth spot to the fourth spot. But Apple is still making the vast majority of the profits because most of the iPhones, well, all the iPhones they sell are premium models, whereas Samsung, we spoke a couple of weeks ago about their mid-range A series models, and those ones are well under $1,000, whereas, you know, most of Apple's are from $1,000 to nearly $3,000. So Apple makes a lot of the profits, but Samsung's back in the number one spot, and I'm sure they'll be very happy about that.
Now, where are we up to in terms of 6G in Australia, and how good is 6G going to be?
Well, look, we're about halfway through the 5G era. It was supposed to start off about 2020, but naturally people like Telstra and AT&T in America, you know, had sort of things happening as early as 2018, and Korea as well for the Olympics, they had things early. But it was from 2020 that it really took off. And look, for many people, 5G isn't that much faster than 4G. I've done speed tests where I get a faster upload speed on 4G than 5G. But which is funny because, I mean, you know, all those promises didn't come true. I mean, sometimes the tech people promise stuff and it doesn't quite come true. I mean, we've all seen where technology has played up on us. Now, four big Japanese companies, NTT and one of their offshoots, NEC and Fujitsu, have created a wireless device capable of ultra high speed 100 gigabits transmissions. So what does that mean? Well, 100 gigabits is 100,000 megabits per second, or 1,000 times faster than the 100 megabit connections that many people have on the NBN, and obviously 2,000 times faster than the 50 megabit connections that many people have. And 5G services can theoretically reach 4.9 gigabit speeds, but this is obviously going to be 20 times faster than that. But in reality, I mean, all these theoretical maximums are one thing, but most people get between, you know, 50 to 600 megabits on their 5G phones, and usually it's closer to 100 or less. And some people on prepaid plans are capped by the companies to 150 or 250 megabits because you're prepaid, you're not paying the full amount, so they give you less, but it's still faster than 4G in theory. So in about 5 years' time, we'll start seeing the very first 6G implementations. It'll be from about 2030 onwards, and then there'll be the whole AI phone with 6G. You'll have
AI,
but that's still
phone
about five.
With 6G. Of course there's going to be an AI phone with 6G.
Well, there's AI phones right now. The big phones, this, I mean, the Samsung S24 is an AI phone, and the iPhone 16 this year, it's going to be all about AI. But 6G, we'll start hearing about it properly in stores in about 5 years, and we'll be talking about it for many years to come between now and then.
Give your program for Saturday night Australian time a plug.
Well, it's on between 6 and 7 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. Last week, I had a really great chat with a fellow called Alex Jenkins, who was from the Western Australian Data Science Innovation Hub. And we spoke all about AI, of course, AI in warfare. Is AI going to take your job? AI in education? And look, I'm trying to line up the SWAN. We spoke about SWAN last week. It's not confirmed yet, but I want them to tell us about their home security systems and how they're using AI. So when you push the button, it seems like there's somebody at home. You're having a conversation, but it's all with an AI chatbot. So that show is going really well. I'm certainly loving doing it. And I mean, I saw people on the chat saying, oh, I don't like tech. And it's like, well, give me a call. Let's discuss, let's debate the issues. Tech's the most important thing for many people. And that's, you know, going to change the way we live our lives. Yeah. If you're happy about it, give me a call. We take calls here at TNT.
Even older people can resist this as much as they want, but it will have an impact on them slowly, gradually, but surely.
And look, the good thing is that over the next 5 years, computers, you'll just be talking to them like on Star Trek. So all this button pushing and learning things, you can forget about all that. You'll just be able to say to a computer, do this, do that, help me with this, pack the washing machine because the robot will do it, and it'll be natural language interaction. This business will seem very quaint of pushing buttons on a screen.
Very true, very true. That's the future. It's coming to a device near you. I've got to get out of here, and so do you, Alex. We'll be listening on Saturday night, Australian time. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Good on you. Here's the website, by the way, is techadvice.life. All of what we've discussed and more will be on that site a little bit later. I've got to run. Sonia Poulton is up next. Let's do it again at the same time tomorrow, eh? This is Chris Smith on TNT.